Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American Joe Sib is a comedian known for his witty and engaging stand-up performances. He incorporates his life experiences from growing up in California to being a former punk rock frontman in the bands Wax and 22 Jacks to his now current life as a father into his comedy routines. Joe's style combines storytelling with observational humor, offering a unique perspective shaped by his diverse background in music and comedy. One of the many highlights of his comedy career was the unique opportunity, along with comedy legend Jim Brewer, to be the opening act of the 2018-2019 Metallica tour, which redefined the term opening act. His performances are appreciated for their authenticity and humor that resonates with audiences who enjoy comedy with a fresh and honest perspective. In 2025, Joe makes his Edinburgh debut with his show called California Calling. The show is a high-energy, hilarious, and heartfelt ride through Joe's punk rock-fueled journey. He fuses stand-up and storytelling like no one else, sharing raw, relatable tales from the 1980s to stages with Metallica, The Ramones, and Social Distortion. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing his journey in the entertainment world and more about his show California Calling, is Joe Sib.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Well, first of all, I am in one of the most beautiful places in the world. I'm in Maui. It's beautiful. It's my last break, Barrett, before I head to French. So I'm going to hang here and I'm just surfing, enjoying the weather. We have a killer place that we're staying at, my buddy's house. We got a truck. What else? I did comedy last night. I got here and my girlfriend hooked me up a show like immediately. Like I hadn't even landed and there was a show. And this morning we were out the door at 5:30 and we just got back from surfing. Yeah, I love it. Maui's heaven on earth. It's amazing.
Okay, let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be in this comedy world? And how did that journey progress?
You know, for me, I always thought comedians from the beginning, from when I saw George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Flip Wilson, all of those comics, what I loved about them is they were up there by themselves. So even although I went into music originally, I always thought there was something so amazing watching a comedian go up there armed with only a microphone in front of a large audience and be able to make that many people laugh. And from the time I was a little kid, I would say really young. You know, my dad and I, he turned me on to Monty Python's Flying Circus, Saturday Night Live, Steve Martin. You know, he was a really, even though my dad is a linguist and a professor and super just, you know, education is his life, books. He has one of the best sense of humors around. From the time I was a little kid, he really educated me on, I feel, some of the finer comedians out there. You know, he liked highbrow comedy, so he was always turning me on to people like that. So I would say comedy's been a part of my life since the beginning.
So you said that you first initially got into music and then you transitioned to comedy. First of all, what were you doing in music?
I was a singer. So I started out as when I was a kid, I was in the suburbs at the right time in California when punk rock hit the suburbs. And it was that second wave, bands like Black Flag, Circle Jerks, you know, TSOL, that whole scene, the Adolescents, all of those bands. When they hit the suburbs in California, I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And then as I got older, you know, I decided that I wanted to start my own band. I started out on bass and then I moved over to vocals. I was 15 years old when I joined my first band and I was involved with being in bands from the time I was 15. You know, I was in my first band. I moved to LA. I met these three guys from Chicago. We started a band called Wax. Wax ended up getting signed to Interscope. We worked with Jimmy Iving. We worked with Spike Jones doing our videos. And then when that band fell apart, I ended up starting a new band that was kind of an all-star band. It was Steve Soto from The Adolescents, Matt Riddle from Face to Face, Chris Shiflett from No Use for a Name, who now plays in the Foo Fighters, Jose Medeles, who was on drums. Also, the original drummer was from The Adolescents, this guy named Sandy Hansen, great drummer. I put together that band. So I played music all the way up to the time I was about 33. And then at that time, I had started a record company called Sidewind Dummy. And Sidewind Dummy was a label responsible for bands like Flogging Molly, Gogo Bordello, Gaslight Anthem, The Warped Tour. And me and my partner, my best friend, Bill Armstrong, we signed all those bands together, along with another 150 after that. And we just ended up, music was my primary focus from the time I was 15 till the time I started doing stand-up. And I didn't start doing stand-up, really doing it a lot until I was much older. I was in like my early 40s when I started.
And are you still involved in the record label?
No, me and my partner sold the label about 3 years ago. And it's great because the label, it's still Side One Dummy. And something that him and I started together is still continuing. It has a really great team of people that work there that are as passionate about it as we were when we started it. So it's really cool to see it still growing like that.
At what point did you think, okay, I want to be now, after being in the music industry, record label, performing, now I want to be a comedian? What was that light bulb moment? What was the thing that said to you, okay, this is where I'm going now?
What had happened was the show that I'm bringing over to Edinburgh, this is a show called California Calling. I had always toyed with the idea of writing something like that. And I met a friend and she said, you should do it, And I was at a time in my life where, my kids were, they were young. I wanted to get back on stage. That's really what it was all about. It was trying to figure out a way to get back on stage without, being in a band, because all of my friends that had started, bands. And then when the band breaks up, they generally play acoustic or do something like that. And I didn't want to play acoustic guitar. I wanted to figure out a way to get back on stage. And the only way that I could figure out getting back on stage was either in a band, which I didn't want to do anymore, or maybe go through comedy. And that really was the choice that I decided to pursue. And all I wanted to do at the beginning, honestly, is just be good enough to not be the guy that was the worst person on the lineup. I just wanted to be good enough that, if six comedians went up, you wouldn't say, oh yeah, the guy with the slick back hair, he was the worst. I wanted to get good at it. And like anything in my life, once I start doing something, I don't know about you, but I just nerd out on it. And I'll be honest with you, Barrett, doing shows in Chicago, and there was a comedian on the show, and she was opening up, and she was probably 30 years old, and we started talking, and she said, yeah, I just don't know if I want to do this, as a career. And I said to her, you know what? That's really smart of you to realize that right now. And she was doing great. She was having great sets. But I said to her, as much as I love stand-up comedy, I love it. Like, I think about it. I mean, think about it. I flew to Maui to take a vacation. I wasn't even off the plane for more than, 6 hours. And I was already on stage telling jokes. And I love stand-up. And what I said to this person was, I said, be careful, because if you fall in love with stand-up comedy, if you fall in love because you think you're going to be famous, if you fall in love because you think you're going to get followers on Instagram and TikTok, if that's the reason you're doing stand-up, that's going to be a hard path. But if you truly fall in love with the art, with writing a joke, thinking it in your head, you're driving around in your car, you're at your terrible job that you hate, you write something down that you think is funny, and then that night you go on stage in front of strangers and you say the words that your brain thought, they come through your mouth, through the microphone, and into people's ears, and they make people laugh. To me, that is an addiction. And I am chasing that addiction all the time. And I've never done drugs in my entire life, And I understand now why people can get addicted to a high like that, because I find myself doing comedy in the strangest places, no different than someone that does drugs. Like if you told me tonight, hey, there's a really sketchy show going on underneath the bridge and you have to go down there and there's a strike, you know, the police might come and shut it down. The first thing I'd say, is there going to be a crowd? Oh yeah, no, it's a good audience. They're good. But just if you want to go there for 10 minutes, it's, and you have to perform in the dark, it's going to be super sketchy. But will it, is it good? Is it good? Oh, Joe, it's a great show. I would go there.
I get the sense you, similar to me, it's like I cover a lot of events like red carpets, movie premieres, theater shows, et cetera. And I always say yes. I always pitch up and I say yes, because it's about honing the craft. And the more you pitch up and the more you are there and the more you say yes, the better you get and the more it'll build up the foundations to continue to be and become great.
Absolutely. What you just said, continuing to say yes, that right there is the biggest takeaway of what you just said, because all we do is our brain tells us all the things not to do. Don't post that. Don't say that. Don't do that. Oh my gosh, why would you want to do that? That'll be hard. There's that part of our brain that talks us out of doing things, and we miss out on so many opportunities. And stand-up comedy for people, some people, it's a bucket list. Oh my gosh, I would love to do stand-up comedy, and they never do it. For me, when I started doing it, it started out as, I just want to get good enough, like I said, that I don't stink up the lineup. And then what ended up happening was I just fell in love with it. And at that point, wanted to become the best that I possibly could.
Besides saying yes all the time and honing your craft in that way, how do you create or prepare your set?
You know what? I prepare my set just like a musician, like I did when I was in a band. You know, like a set list.
Yeah.
No different than songs, you know? I know my material, where if I, like right now I'm doing a joke about ChatGPT. So it's just, it'll be, you know, ChatGPT full bit. Then I do a bit about, you know, my son and why doesn't he ever wear a shirt? You know what I'm saying? Like just things like that. Or, you know, I'll do a bit about my son and his friends and it's entitled Morons. And I know that that joke is about, I know that that joke is about my son and his friends. You know, he's 20 years old. He has his friends over. I treat it as almost like if you looked at my, before I went on stage, you looked at my set list. It's the set list that's completely, it's all about, it looks just words like songs.
What's the difference for you having your own sort of show compared to being in a lineup with other comedians?
What I love about doing my own show, and this is one of the reasons why I said yes to Fringe, is because the show, I get to control all the elements. I get to play the music at the beginning of the show. I get to do an hour of what I want to do. There's no one else on the show. So there's as much as I love that it's just me, there's also no one else to, you know, sometimes another comic could change the energy in the room and it could be negative. Sometimes another comic could be on the show and it could be great and it could push you. What I love about doing the hour by myself is it's 100% on me. It's 100% my energy, my vibe, everything I'm putting out there. And I love the opportunity to get to do that, because when you're doing 4 minutes or 5 minutes, you're just one person in a wheel of comics going up there. And for me, as much as I love doing, you know, the 3 minutes or the 4 minutes or doing those things, it's a different muscle that you're using. It's like anything else. You know, when you do an hour, you're working out one type of muscle. When you do 3 minutes, you're doing a different type of muscle. So although I love doing all of those, when you get to do the hour, you really get to sink into your show and your vibe and putting that out there to people.
Being a comedian, obviously, you need to be able to read the audience, feel the energy of the room, et cetera, et cetera. Is this something that's always come easily to you, or you've had to learn to build it up over time?
To answer your question, since I've been on stage since I was 10 years old, I started out as a magician. I did magic. And then I realized that if I was ever going to have sex with a woman, instead of just being by myself, I'd have to, you know, put away the magic tricks. So I stopped doing magic, you know, and that was right around the time that I got into, you know, being in a band. I've been on stage since I was 10 years old, and I feel that that has really lent a great barometer. I'm able to watch an audience. I can tell what is working. I can tell that someone might not be paying attention. I can tell someone's on their phone. I can tell. I also can tell when they're really with me on the journey, and I love the tug of war with them. I mean, there's nothing better when you're connecting with an audience and they buckled up, they put the seatbelt on, and they are on the journey with you. You know, I'm good at noticing that too. You know, although I do a bit of it, if it makes sense, crowd work, I feel is definitely something that I'm good at. I've always been able to make something connect and think on my feet. Well, crowd work, in my opinion, sometimes a lot of comedians lean on the crowd work because they don't have the material. Now, if you have the material and you can sprinkle crowd work through your set, I think that's great, because what I've learned over the years is that when you come to a new city, you know, whether it's Scotland or Montana, all those people are from there. And when you're a guest in their city, when you're a guest in their town, and if you pick up on certain characteristics of the city, certain characteristics of the people that live there, there's a connection that builds between you and the audience, because they're like, oh, wow. Like over here in Maui last night, I made a joke. And if you ever come to Maui, you'll remember me saying this, or any of your listeners. One of the things that happens over here in Maui, since it's an island, is, you know, people have to rent cars when they come over. And one of the things sometimes that happens is sometimes those cars get stolen. And so that the people that stole the car, what they'll do is they'll take it out off the side of the freeway or off the side of these roads, and then they'll light it on fire. Yeah, the car's burned out, right? But what I thought was funny was you have this beautiful island, and then every once in a while, there's just a burned out car. You know, I made a joke last night. Hey, instead of telling everyone to go scuba diving or telling everyone to go, you know, surfing, like I'm telling you, if you guys advertise that I could rent a car, do some drinking with my friend, and later on at some point, we're going to light the car on fire and we just get to leave it there. Oh my God. I would love, like, dude, sign me up. You know, when I did that joke last night, everyone was laughing because that's only here in Maui. Just as like, I've never been to Scotland before. And I'm sure when I go over there, there's going to be things that I notice. So I feel like you build a connection with the audience when you share with them, hey, I'm a stranger in your town, and these are the things I'm noticing.
You referenced a little while ago about someone being on their cell phone during the show. I get frustrated lately because so many people have no longer got this etiquette, in the sense that, oh, you know, the other people in the audience, I can now free-for-all be texting or WhatsApping on my phone, which drives me insane. And I always shout at the people. How do you handle that situation?
So if I see someone on their phone and they're on their phone constantly, like if someone's on their phone, I understand. I'm a parent. You know, I remember when my kids were younger, you know, next thing you know, you're at the show. I understand. Hey, you're out on a night with your wife, you're out on a wife with your partner. All of a sudden, you know, you do have to answer the text because the babysitter is texting you. Hey, Junior just swallowed a marble. Okay, let's, you know, like you have, I understand that. But what you're talking about, if someone is just sitting there while I'm doing my show and they're on their phone, I'm definitely going to bring something up and, you know, I'll make a joke with it. You know, I'll have fun with them about it, but I'm also not afraid to say to them, hey, you know, just so you know, you don't have to be here. And if you're, you know, if what I'm doing isn't entertaining you enough that you can't be after your phone for 50 minutes, then you know what? You should go up to the front, get your money back and split, because you're ruining it for the rest of everyone.
Exactly.
Because I mean, you know, as we all know, the phone and everything that we're doing, you know, someone said to me the other day about the show California Calling, like, you know, what is someone going to walk away from? And I said, you know what, if you're coming to my show to hear about how terrible everything is and how, you know, these times that we're living in, oh my God, that's not what my show's about. My show is 50 minutes to give your brain and your body and your heart a break from the chaos that we're all living in, the uncertainty that we're unliving. This is like, imagine you're in the desert and you haven't had water for weeks. My show, it's a glass of water. It's a place for you to relax before you have to go back into that desert and make it across to wherever you're going. That's what my show's about. That's the feeling that I want to give someone. If they walk away, that's what I want them to walk away with.
So you've told us what it's about. So you're going to be at the Fringe Festival. Tell us the dates and for how long?
Yeah, so I fly over on the 23rd. I got a show, I believe, the 24th, 25th in England. I go from England to Scotland. And then my first show, I believe, is the 28th of July. I go all the way to the 26th of August.
Oh, wow. So it's a long, long run. Besides the Fringe Festival, what else is coming up for the rest of the year?
I've been touring extensively in the United States doing my comedy, my stand-up. I have an hour of stand-up. Basically, the plan is to record that at the end of the year. And then I have California Calling. That's a total departure from my stand-up comedy, California Calling. Funny show, but it's different than my stand-up that I would do. And then the idea is to finish out the year with possibly, recording my hour of stand-up. And then next year, depending on how California Calling goes, there's talk that, either I'll go back over to Europe and do more dates with California. I mean, it really comes down to this. I've never been over to Europe to do comedy. So I'm going over there. If England, Ireland, and Scotland and all those people are like, yo, we love your show, come back, I will. But if they're not feeling it, then it's a one and done.
And then also add South Africa on your list.
I love that. Let's go.
I know you referenced that you don't really focus on the negative stuff. There's a lot of cancel culture that's been around for the last number of years, and especially with comedians, because the comedians are there to push the boundaries, to focus on things that, make people think and confront things. What are your observations and feelings on the cancel culture?
If you're doing comedy, this is my feelings, that when you get on stage, if you're getting on stage and you want to push the envelope and you want to push people's buttons, like I always say, my kids know how to push my buttons.
Oh my gosh.
My son, my daughter, I love them, but they have my combination down. They know what words to use. They know what topics to talk about. They know how to deliver it. They know how to write it. They got me figured out. The only thing is, though, the only one thing I have is I know when they're pushing my buttons. I know they are. So my thing is, I believe when a comic gets on stage and he's going to talk about topics, he knows those topics are buttons in the audience, whether it's buttons about politics, whether it's buttons about sexuality, whether it's buttons about religion. And he's going up there and he's pushing buttons. Now, there's one of the comics that I love that can do it in a way that I love is Bill Burr. Bill Burr, in my opinion, and I've seen him do it and watched him do it, he has this ability to dig a hole and you're like, I don't know where you're going with this. You'll see him do a bit where people aren't even laughing because the topic that he's chosen is so right on the line of like, where could this possibly go that'll be funny? Like this topic, like what are you? And then all of a sudden, because he's like a surgeon, he's like a scientist, he just knows what word, what combination of words, and the timing to deliver something that all of a sudden takes a topic that's so just, like I said, that is, how is this going to be funny? And with the ability that he has, he can make it funny. He can make it funny. And all of a sudden, that hole he dug, he comes out and he's on top and everyone's laughing and everyone's looking at it with a different perspective. Even if they're not agreeing with them, they're laughing and going, you know what? I think you're crazy, but that is funny. And I could see why that is. Okay. So there's that approach, right? And then there's the other approach of, I think some people get off on saying mean things. And then when people react, they go, oh, Oh, really? Get over it. I'm a comedian. Oh, you can't. You don't like comedy. Oh, wow. I'm a comedian. You know, I'm being funny. And you know what? That's where the dad in me goes, you know what you're doing. You knew it when you started it. It really, and where's the joke? If you're going to say things that are going to get people to think and possibly at the end have a different opinion, I'm all for that. But if you know you're walking out on stage and your job is you want to stir it up, and you know, like Anthony Jeselnik is one of my favorite comedians. As much as I love him, the jokes that he writes and the things that he says are so that, but they're so well written, you know. And I listen to him, and just when he's going this way, he goes the other way, and he and it just and I love it. And I'm sure some people could get offended by it, but that's what he loves to do, and he's great at it. You know, and unfortunately, I do feel that, you know, some comedians, I think it's all about your intent. You know, like, what's your intention? Do you want to say things that hurt people's feelings, or do you want to say things that might hurt, you know, someone's feelings a little bit, but in the end, you're going to give them, you know, another option. That's one of the things I feel like that's going on in the world right now. Everyone is, you know, people get so upset. They're like, I hate this, and I hate these people, and I hate that, da, da. And I'm all for, like, dude, tell me what you're not feeling. But as much as you're going to lead with what you don't like, if you don't like something, just all I ask is after I listen to you, tell me what you don't like, that why it's wrong. Just all I ask, I want one more piece. I want another option. I just want you to give me another option. Like if you say, you know, I don't want A, B, and C, and these are the reasons I don't like A, and I can't stand B, and I will never deal with C. And here's what I suggest we all do. And they go, here's D. And you're like, okay, all right. Okay, you know what? I'm not a fan of that, but thank you for giving me the option. That's all I'm looking for.
So, Joe, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
I would like to say to everyone that's listening to me and Barrett right now, first of all, I hope you have a great day today. Like wherever you are, if you're listening to the podcast while you're running, I listen to podcasts while I like go for a jog. If you just dropped your kids off at school and you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to kill some time before I get to work. If you're listening to this because you listen to podcasts before you crash out, you know, you're in bed and you're like, my day's done. I'm going to listen to Barrett. Hey, it was nice meeting you all. I hope someday we cross paths. If we do cross paths, don't not come up and say hi to me. Walk over the room and say, hey, I heard you with Barrett, and I would just want to introduce myself. I love meeting people that way. And I just hope that I get a chance to have you come to a show at some point, whether it's my comedy, whether it's my show, California Calling. If you are going to be in Scotland, or if you know anyone, seriously, anyone that's listening to this, please send people to my show, because if not, it's going to be me in front of the guy running sound, and that's not fun. So please come out to the show. Make sure you say hello. And Barrett, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.